You've dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Don't touch that dial. You're exactly where you want to be. You've landed in Juicebox Radio on CITR 101.9 FM, or maybe you're one of our online listeners at CITR.ca. If you ever miss a show, make sure you can download it at juiceboxradio.com.
However you got to spend this hour with us, we're glad to have you.
And welcome back to Juicebox. It's been a whole week.
So how have you been feeling this week, Julia?
Well, I don't know. I've had a really major roller coaster ride of emotional, relational issues, spiritual stuff, sexual roller coaster ride. I can't even believe it. Feels like it's been about a month since this past week has passed, but it's actually been a week, and I've been through so much crap. Mm-hmm. and just emotional roller coasters. And I've also had the most beautiful, amazing experiences as well. So, as I said, it's been a roller coaster ride. So, I think I decided to do a show tonight on like the more crazy aspects of love and relationships. That sort of the chemical drive of infatuation. Mm-hmm. What causes jealousy? I mean, there's chemicals in our brains and our bodies that make us act and feel like pretty delusional, really.
I love that word, delusional.
So it's, this show's all about delusional love, delusional jealousy, lust. It's all in the context of what we call love and relationship, but is it really love? I don't know.
Let's find out.
Stay tuned to find out.
Well, we'll be taking calls tonight, so if you guys want to call in and contribute to the conversation we're going to be having tonight, you can do that at 604-822-CITR. That's 604-822-2487.
Yeah, and please do feel free to call in. Where are we now? We are at, okay, I'm just trying to get a little bit of engineering going there.
It's okay.
So, I was at Recompression on the Sunshine Coast. It's a Vancouver Burner event, and found my polyamorous relationship, and I ended things a year after we'd been together. And, perhaps I did overreact a little bit. Perhaps I do expect a lot of love and attention from my relationships, and that's true. I think I do.
Do you want to give our listeners just kind of the 100 words or less?
Yeah, no, just that Dan 3 and I had like one night to spend together, and he ended up spending, after fucking me for an hour, spending like 3 hours with some other woman down at the beach. And I took that really hard, and And, you know, anyway, it's a big, long, drawn-out tale that I won't bore everybody with, but...
I don't think it'd be boring at all, darling, so...
This jealousy thing, though, I was sort of like, wow, you know, I just wanted to dedicate the show to, like, the crazier side of relationships. Mm-hmm. Infatuation, jealousy, lust. You know, some of us actually avoid relationships altogether to avoid this roller coaster ride. You think you're one of them, aren't you, Caroline?
I'm very much one of them. But then again, I'm not having sex with anybody that I don't like and respect enough to raise a child with amicably to the age of 21. So that's wow. My New Year's resolution. We'll see how long. It's been 3 months. So
it's been pretty good.
Actually, almost coming up to 4 months.
Wow.
So I'm doing really, really well. But
well, I think you know, often this roller coaster ride kind of comes with the territory of being with others in a sexual and romantic way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Some people are really addicted to the roller coaster ride, and we're going to talk about why that is. A fellow Masters of Education student person, Dana Peach, she wrote a really interesting piece about infatuation, which we're gonna read to the listeners tonight because I think it's really well done,
mm-hmm.
Written very well, and sort of sums it up quite nicely. The psychology, the chemical side of things, you know, sort of different models of why people have infatuation, and sort of some of the answers of why it is that we act and feel the way we do.
Infatuation is a pretty amazing thing. So she goes on, infatuation, we are in love with it. Millions of men and women live in anxious hopes of experiencing it as soon as possible, over and over again, if necessary. Come to think of it, infatuation has been a popular model for love itself, and at this very moment, infatuation fever is directing the most critical intimate choices of an enormous subculture of singles.
But wait, before you rush to your next rapture, consider some of the following viewpoints on this most popular of all feeling states. Think about what it really is to be infatuated.
Plainly, the word itself officially defined as a kind of affliction, a common parlance. Infatuation is known as being a fool for love. Most of us recognize it as a state in which a normal person's ability to think clearly and act rationally are flung aside with suspicious eagerness.
Sounds like me.
Desire is a delusion. Desire focuses on a particular someone, and suddenly nothing else matters but that compelling attraction. The dictionary strongly suggests that the overt result of infatuation is reduction in mental capacity.
Sounds familiar. Well, a frequent synonym given for infatuation is folly, predicting grave consequences to follow from stupidity, which was resulting from fixated passion.
And that sounds ominous.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, there must be something about infatuation that accounts for the hold it has over our imaginations.
And our choices.
And over our choices, exactly. I mean, most of us know that the feelings of infatuation from direct personal experience. I think most of us, even from the time we were really little kids, you know, we were talking about this last week, you know, just love fever through stories told at pajama parties, you know, whispers, fairy tales, that sort of anguished confidences of dear friends, you know,
mm-hmm.
like cartoons, fine literature, B-movies, cinematic art, you name it, soap operas, romantic novels, wherever and however reported, the sensate phenomenon are remarkably similar. So that means the same senses, the same kind of experience that humans have of infatuation across the board, across the ages.
Phase one, stricken. The first act in a life of infatuation is the magic moment when someone takes on a special meaning to us. Like in grade 8, remember? Oh my God, he said hi to me. I'm in love. Julia, I'm so in love with him. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Do you think he likes me? He kind of looked at me, kind of, sort of. I think that's a good thing. Do you think? It's kind of like that you hear a phrase or a particular inflection in someone's voice that strikes a chord in your heart. You're struck by the exact tilt of his head.
Right.
You're warmed by a gaze or or an unexpected tenderness. An intriguing remark goes straight to your soul. Or perhaps from a respectable distance, you notice legs or hair or skin. Or maybe a more physical, private part.
Tits, ass, the cock.
I was thinking of John Travolta's cock in those tight pants and grease.
Lightning has struck. Infatuation phase two, intrusive thinking. So after the bolt of lightning comes a storm of intrusive thinking about the desired one. Every experience you now have seems interwoven with, like, their qualities. Every shared moment weighted with new meaning. When apart from them, you review them and you relish each moment spent in their presence and you ruminate on their flavor. In fact, many infatuation informants report spending 80 to 100% of their time compulsively trying to crystallize the vision of their new love, living in vigilant expectation of the next contact.
Infatuation, phase three. Idealization.
That's where I'm having a lot of problems with the idealization part.
Oh, darling.
Ooh.
Oh, I hear feedback.
Yeah. It's because we've got issues with the board again.
We have issues about a lot of things, darling. Both of us do. As do our listeners, I'm sure. Early in the intrusive thinking stage, idealization sets in. The erotic sizzle permeates everything and creates that famous halo which we love to blind ourselves.
That famous halo with which we love to blind ourselves, yes.
For a while, the infatuee sees no flaws in the beloved and admits no blocks to forward process.
So it's like progress.
Oh, progress. And process, it's like, progress, so what same thing.
So what Dana Peach is talking about there, I think, is that we idealize our, this, you know, the love is blind thing.
Like, it's the honeymoon period.
And we see that there's, like, no possible way that it could fail. Like, it's just like, I'm going to marry that person. Like, they're perfect for me, everything, you know?
Yeah,
and I've done,
like,
it
that,
so many times.
It's like that Bridget Jones moment when she's imagining, when she looks at Hugh Grant, of course, in the movie, and I'm obsessed with Hugh Grant, listeners, if you don't know that already. But with that, where she sees the whole wedding thing, where she's like, and she's like, dum dum da dum, dum dum da dum, just because he looks at her in work. So it's like that, where you see somebody on the street, it's like, I wonder what they'd be like to marry.
We all do that. And so I think
it's
the emotional roller coaster, infatuation phase number four. From this high-intensity anticipation comes the primary emotional dynamic of infatuation, an exquisite combination of hope and uncertainty, which has funded libraries of poetry. At this point, life becomes that famous roller coaster ride, precious moments of delightful reciprocity, whether it's real or imagined, which is the delusional part that we're talking about, followed by agonizing doubts of, like, ultimate success. You know, so the pits of the despair to, like, the heights of pleasure and rapture, which is what infatuation is like. It's so crazy. I mean, it's now more consciously driven by simple fear, infatuation. In fact, the nagging fear of not getting what you have begun to desire is the unique torment reserved for the infatuated elite. And this pattern of human experience is as well documented as any emotional experience has ever been. You can find poignant elaborations on the process, fixed in celluloid, playing on the radio, and filtering through the voices all around you. It is a famous and favorite form of anguish. But how can something so uncomfortable be so irresistible?
Science has an answer for infatuation.
Do you want me to read this one?
Yes, please.
Research has confirmed the existence of an amphetamine-like chemical, which is rapidly activated like lightning. When we begin to feel attracted to someone, so this chemical is called phenethylamine, and it's PEA. I think you might have seen it in a lot of things out there. Phenethylamine. It's a famous substance that makes laboratory rats press levers until they drop dead from exhaustion.
Do 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 do.
So Diane Ackerman, author of The Nature of Love and A Natural History of the Senses, describes PEA as a molecule that speeds up the flow of information between nerve cells, whipping the brain into a frenzy of excitement and sending ordinary attraction into overdrive and providing the assertive oomph needed to take social risks and overcome any obstacles to mating. We can consider this a well-designed molecule from the point of view of species survival.
Whoa. Ooh, feedback.
I think it's because you moved the thing down there, honey.
What thing? Oh, okay. Yes.
Either turn it off or just something.
How do I turn it
just
off?
Just put the volume all the way right there. Yeah. That's good. That should help. That should help. Okay. Yes. But some other researchers claim to have discovered that PEA actually has a tendency to pave the way for that particular contemporary disorder, the relationship addiction, which is something I think I've had issues with.
Me too. That's why I'm taking a hiatus.
Mm-hmm. These researchers point out that this internally generated infatuation drug acts a lot like speed. And some people, and a lot of rats, not used to the rush, start to crave it. So, in other words, some people are always infatuated, but not necessarily with the same person, and not long enough to develop a relationship that actually makes them really happy or leads to lasting happiness. Is this what it means to be a fool for love? A fool for phenethylamine? By many indications, once we are pierced by the arrow of attraction, the biologically compelling quality of infatuation ensures for many people a helpless emotional state, which happens, I think, to me so much in my life. It's like going on right now.
Well, psychology has an answer for infatuation. Biological models explain a lot of the how of infatuation, the mechanism governing the actual phenomenology of a love foolishness. The social sciences have a lot to tell us about the why. Why this particular man? Why that woman? Naturally, Freud would have said, it's all in your head. What else? His most profound contribution to modern thought was to show us the extent of how our behavior, especially our love behavior, is guided by unconscious processes. He might have further emphasized that we are attracted, compelled, I don't know, to experience specific relationships in an attempt to meet intimacy needs shaped in our earliest years with our first love objects,
mom and dad.
They always did say incest is best.
And, oh my God. No, it's about the fact that we always date our parents.
I know.
And I think on a spiritual level, like beyond Freud, I just have a sense that we date our parents because we came to this earth to work certain things out. And so we choose our families, I believe that. And then basically it's like if we can't work it out with our parents, we came to have this human experience to work out our relationship issues with our parents, we then carry that into the next relationship, our next love relationships, you know? So it continues in this cycle. Mm-hmm. So you really do well to like work out your relationships with your parents and like try to heal that so that you don't keep perpetuating the same pattern.
Because it just keeps repeating and repeating, in other words, until you get learn the lesson. Is that what you're saying?
I think so.
So
yeah.
Would you say you date your mom more or your dad more?
For me, I tend to date my my stepfather.
Okay.
And he was like the most influential man, I think, when I was young. But interestingly, you asked me that question about my mother. She's definitely very afraid of intimacy, afraid of connection, avoids it like the plague. And basically every man that I've pretty much been with in my life has been one of those men who can't express his feelings, who can't really commit and be super intimate with me and really connect with me on a spiritual, emotional level for whatever reason. And so that pattern has actually continued, and not surprising because my mother and I just do not have a good relationship at all. So, I don't know. So it's a conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carl Jung popularized the idea that opposites attract, and for very good reasons. He theorized that we're unconsciously drawn to those who exhibit qualities that we find lacking or are somehow undeveloped in our own psyches, and that we always seek to compete or balance ourselves somehow through our intimate attachments. And in the state of infatuation, in the delusion of infatuation, then we're actually pulled like a moth toward a flame we wish to acquire for our permanent warmth.
What do you think about that?
No, I think I agree with him. I mean, I'm a big Jungian advocate in psychology. I think he has made a lot of good sense over the years in what he's proposed and prophesized and modeled and everything else. So I don't know, though. There's another model of infatuation that we're going to talk about. Harville Hendricks, who's an author of Keeping the Love You Find, A Guide for Singles. He had this imago model of infatuation, and he's one of the best explanations I've heard for why we tend to fall so heavily and helplessly, if sometimes so briefly, into this infatuated state. I mean, he says, each of us have in our memory banks a highly individual imprint, a sort of mental construct called an imago, or imago or something, imago? I don't know.
Imago? I'm not sure, actually.
In which sort of the best and the worst attributes of our earliest caretakers have been kind of crystallized. And this imago we have of our dream lover is like an intimacy template. It sort of influences and filters our perception so that we're particularly attentive and sensitized to those who match our private patterns. And then this then accounts for the highly specific nature of our infatuations. And Dr. Hendricks thinks that we have something like psychic receptor sites for certain people who evoke these highly idiosyncratic responses in us. Like, so Harville Hendricks argues, as do many other theorists and prophesizers, that we are unconsciously attracted to people who help us recreate early relationship dynamics in the also unconscious hope that things will turn out better and that we'll have a lot more control this time around of the relationship and its outcome.
The perception of strong attraction then acts as an internal signal which flips on the PAA switch. Remember the infatuation drug?
Yeah.
Apparently such an attraction is relatively involuntary, primitively driven. I love that caveman factor. Mm-hmm. And seemingly beyond our control, just like the drug itself.
But there's good news and there's bad news.
The deeper we go into this matter, the more infatuation seems to reflect its dictionary definition as the epitome of foolishness.
Epitome of foolishness. Yes.
The experience seems to take conscious choice right out of the picture. Mm-hmm. When we're infatuated with something or someone, for me it's shoes and Hugh Grant, it's as if we become little love robots.
These little love robots, yes. These biochemical puppets with no will of our own.
Just like the avatars on, what's that site again?
Red Light Center?
Yes.
Yes. No rational thoughts in our heads. And what is this stupendous payoff for what seems to be a love offering of mindless surrender? What is this payoff?
Okay, truth or dare, Julia, how often have you experienced highly erotic and deeply gratifying lovemaking with someone with whom you're infatuated with?
Quite a bit.
Yes.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
How often has the object of your feverish desire turned out to be as you imagined him or her?
Never. Rarely. It's like emotional bulimia, darling. I always want to vomit sometimes after having really good sex with somebody. Not always, but just sometimes. If it's in a one-nighter or something like that.
Well, obviously for me, the object of my feverish desires turned out to be nothing that I've imagined him or her because I end up not being with them. So,
good point. But how many? That's why we're still searching.
That's right. How many smoldering, daydreamed passions have actually burst into flame? Like, this is what we're saying. Like, how many times have you been a fool for love, only to realize within weeks, if you're lucky, for some people, or months, and sometimes years, that there's no love there. There's only helpless yearning.
Way too many times to count.
Mm-hmm. And then how many sunny, companionable days have you actually spent with someone you worshipped and longed to possess? How many kind of compatible, easy days? In short, how many times has infatuation worked for you?
Rarely.
So the answer to these questions will tell you that there's little happiness in infatuation itself. There's precious little daily satisfaction that's possible when we're acting the fool for love. And that's because the state of infatuation actually thrives on distance and frustration. And it flourishes under difficult circumstances, and it is not magnified by consummation and familiarity. So these are what the elements of infatuation are about. And an infatuation can't actually exceed its own expectations. It is the spark and the emotional kindling, and it's not sort of that steady warming fire that keeps you going in a long-term relationship. It's an appetizer that makes you kind of anticipate the full banquet, but it's not going to keep you warm, and it's not going to fill you up.
No, but it's what gets you there, where it almost takes the pain away of the actual act of falling in love.
Which can be so painful.
Freaky, scary thing, and
freaky
it brings up all your shit.
For sure. And I mean, in fact, like you're saying, infatuation begins a very important emotional signal to point you in the direction of desire and to point you in the direction of getting you moving towards love. But it is not yet love.
And it's important just to be ready to let go of that at that time so you can actually fall and actually really be in love as opposed to just falling in love.
So there's sort of transcendental infatuation. We could talk about that for a moment. Because when all is said and done, we'll always want to fall in love with the pull of a potent attraction. And we will always want to love infatuation, and we will always reserve our right to be a fool for love. And that is as it should be. I mean, who does not want to feel moved by the thrill of a profound, mysterious attraction that's able to overpower our ego defenses and cause us to sort of open our soul to another with the
impetuous
childhood impetuosity. So just like, the state of infatuation is so powerful that we want infatuation to have a meaning beyond that of this chemically induced trance phenomenon. And that is possible with just one little catch.
In order to make certain that infatuation can fulfill its true role in the natural discovery and growth of love, we have to stay semi-conscious and be aware of our choices. Only conscious surrender and sustained attachment can make the original spark of infatuation eventually work to our benefit.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess we're going to take a break after we talk about But after that, we're going to be talking about jealousy. You know, that green-eyed monster, which I know I experience all the time because I'm right on the cusp between a Scorpio and a Sag. And I know you've told me about a few tales about jealousy, too.
Well, it seems to be sort of this innate, inevitable, impossible to overcome emotion. And for many, I think showing jealousy is even taken as a proof of love. Like, you've even said it yourself, Caroline, that jealousy is kind of cool. And I mean, my newest boyfriend, John, whom I'm crazy about and I've fallen in love with and I'm terribly deeply infatuated with at the moment, he was saying how he doesn't care that I'm having these threesomes. He doesn't care about, like, this polyamorous relationship. He's not jealous. And in actual fact, he is. But it's like that emotion is like wants to be rejected. It's like, I hate that emotion. It's like so many of us want to reject the emotion and think it's terrible. But when I found out that he really is feeling a little bit of jealousy, then I was kind of relieved. I was like, well, it's kind of nice to know that he actually cares.
He cares.
So this is interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about this after the break. Because for many, it's this valid excuse for violent and aggressive behavior. For others, it's a proof of love. And until recently, actually, in many countries, catching your partner in bed with a lover was actually a defense for murder. And in some places in the world, it still is a defense for murder.
Which is pretty scary.
Mm-hmm. So evidence is actually accumulating that the roots of sexual jealousy are laid during infancy and are then watered generously by social practices and conventions. And that seems to be a common practice, like people are expressing their jealousy and that's kind of romantic.
Mm-hmm.
So after the break, we're going to talk about what jealousy is, why it affects us so deeply, and what you can do to stop it if you want to. Can jealousy be overcome? Find out by staying tuned to the second half, The Eyes of Jade.
The Eyes of Jade, wow.
on Juicebox. Yes, keep that dial locked. We welcome your calls during this time especially, so please call in 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. You are in Juicebox, featured on Vancouver's 101.9 FM. And we'll be right back after this lively tune, I think very apropos, from one of my favorite songwriters, Jeremy Fisher. Incredible. Saw his concert on Monday night. And
he said really good things about it.
Yeah, and this is, I think, his third album I've ever bought, and I usually buy them directly from him at some concert. So tonight we are going to be playing his hit song off his CD called Goodbye Blue Monday. The hit song is called Cigarette, and we'll be back right after this.
Your mind to the tip of your tongue, reaching out, looking for mine. I'll be your cigarette, light me up and get on with it. I'll be hard to forget. What you come and get from me, I give it up every time you want it. You got it, I'm burning down. It's alright, cause I'll be your cigarette, light me up and get on with it. I'll be hard to forget, good or bad, I'm just a your habit. Hey, hey.
Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You can be sexy with your clothes on. Come check it out on Friday night. Come out to the penthouse and celebrate. It is Aradia Fitness is going to be doing pole dancing in very burlesque style. Enjoy, relax, and chill out and enjoy the show. Proceeds are going to Beauty Night Society. $4 from each ticket will be going to Beauty Night Society to
raise
funds.
What is Beauty Night about?
Beauty Night is an organization that raises awareness and offers wellness programs to disadvantaged women and youth to make them feel really good and really special. And we need money big time, badly, because of the fact we just got space donated and we're very excited about this, and we need to raise some funds so we can run a lot of programming to help these women go back to work and make positive lifestyle changes.
That's fabulous, Ms. President and CEO of Beauty Night Society.
And board member at large.
We just came from a board meeting. All right, so the first half of the show, we were talking about this delusional infatuation stage, lust, and a lot of times jealousy is a big, big piece of that. But jealousy also continues through long-term relationships as well. And so we want to talk a little bit in the second hour about the green-eyed monster, this jealousy feeling that we all feel, absolutely normal human emotion. What you do about it and how you deal with it is really the key. So we're going to talk about how we can get rid of it, overcome it if possible, and what it's all about.
And in most societies, an individual who shows a total lack of it would be regarded as odd, and to a certain element of mutual jealousy is often seen as evidence of a healthy, involved relationship. However, we all know that jealousy can be a bit
It can become really excessive.
Sometimes this is perfectly understandable. For example, when a sexual partner is being provocative, flirtatious with others, or downright unfaithful. Despite all the sexual
Unless
freedom,
you like a person to be like that.
I don't know. I'm not really into that myself.
Oh, so. I'm so flirtatious and provocative. I don't think it'd be possible to be my boyfriend without being able to like that about me. For other people, it's different, right?
Oh, so. I'm not saying I'm not provocative or flirtatious, but I just try not to be when I'm in a relationship.
Mm.
Yeah, but I've had my good fair share. But despite all the sexual freedom of the past three decades, possessiveness is almost still universally present in human relationships. So we're not surprised when somebody reacts to this kind of situation with anger or jealousy. We see this as a normal human reaction, perhaps as an extension of our territorial sense, and perhaps the jealousy abates as the situation resolves itself.
In most cases, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. At other times, I think that the degree and duration of an individual's jealous feelings are so severe that they can only be regarded as evidence of illness. And sort of in the past, an abnormal degree of jealousy might have been construed as a specific disorder. But nowadays, it's known that it can be a symptom of a whole variety of psychological and emotional problems. So often when a clinician meets with the case, he or she knows that a careful assessment of the situation of the person's mental state has to be undertaken in order to understand the form the jealousy takes and whether or not it is symptomatic of a specific mental disorder. Then hopefully a worthwhile intervention can be undertaken. But unfortunately, we do not always have the opportunity to intervene at the appropriate time. And at its worst, jealousy can be very pathological, with dreadful, sometimes lethal consequences. And, you know, these kinds of stories, unhappily, are not too uncommon. I think you hear about it in the news all the time.
We hear about it at Beauty Night all the time, for our own organization.
Mm-hmm. And even lesser degrees of abnormality may cause severe suffering. And we know that some victims of pathological jealousy can become, like, housebound because they're terrified of another accusation of infidelity if they go out from the house or if they're, like, out with their friends. You know, others may attempt suicide because they've reached sort of the end of their tether. Many just keep their mouths shut and put up with this constant barrage of assault, sometimes physical as well as mental. That's abnormal jealousy, and it's probably much more common than we realize. But the victims don't often complain in many cases because they're out of embarrassment or fear, or in some cases, ignorance of what's normal. So
well, what about the rest of us, though?
Yeah, it's like...
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's those that feel the nagging surges of anger and pain that it can trickle down to resentment or envy or mental anguish and uneasiness caused by suspicion or fear of our partner or lover being with another. Mm-hmm. Even simple things like going out with for lunch with a coworker, sometimes that's in question. Mm-hmm. And jealousy rears its ugly head daily for some of us and often for most. But if we look really deeply into the core of our jealousy, we can discover ungrounded expectations, projections, envy, loss of self-esteem, infantile fears and insecurities.
Right.
And these aren't nice discoveries. In fact, they may be so unpleasant that some people try hard to avoid them, like the guy mm-hmm. you're talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
where it's just like
trying to avoid them and just feeling like, you know, it shows a loss of self-esteem. It shows mm-hmm. that I have, like, you know, I'm emotionally immature. I can't deal with, you know, my own self. So it's like I want to possess somebody. So I think people often feel embarrassed by jealousy sometimes, you know, and that it shows that they're immature in some way or whatever, or that they're being possessive, so they want to reject those feelings.
Mm-hmm. Or it shows that they care too much and it freaks them out, where it's like, I don't really want to go there. I'm not ready to admit that I care that much about mm-hmm. somebody.
That too.
Or that I feel weak because I can't believe I'm letting this person have that much power over me.
Mm-hmm. All of those reasons, yeah. So mm-hmm. so people feel such a mixture of different attitudes and emotions around jealousy that often we try to sort of mask it as something else or put the blame on another person.
Mm-hmm. And one of the most common questions of people with the jealousy problem is, well, can jealousy be overcome? And the answer is yes, but it does take a great deal of effort, like most things in life when it comes to change.
Mm-hmm. The most difficult emotional experiences, I think jealousy, if treated correctly, can be a huge trigger for growth.
Definitely.
And a much more effective approach is an open and honest examination of the issues. So taking those steps to, like, communicate about what's going on and how you feel and, you know, what is that person doing that's making you perhaps feel the way you do, and or, you know, is it really just you being completely low self-esteem and wanting to be possessive? And such an examination that I'm talking about can do more than help relieve the jealous person's perceived threat. It can also help enhance the relationship and deepen both people's commitment to each other.
It can be a really good first step for self-awareness and greater understanding for both of your mate as well as the relationship. But of course, the most important thing is yourself, because that's where it really starts.
Mm-hmm. So how do you overcome jealousy?
Well, there's many reasons. You got to examine, first of all, why do you feel jealous? And there's many reasons why we feel jealous. And though it's a normal human emotion to feel it, it tends to get out of control if we fail to tame it.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to tame it and control it, first you got to figure out where it's coming from. Like, once you figure it out, controlling it becomes so much simpler.
Mm-hmm. Once you find out the causes, like, so when your jealous emotions come out, all you know is that you're feeling that way, right? It's mm-hmm. like you're just so highly aroused. This is exactly when you must take a pause. So every time you feel jealous, you should pause and ask yourself, why do I feel this way? Does it have something to do with your own self-esteem? Or does the person you're in a relationship with providing you with, like, good reasons to feel this way? So, like, flirting or sitting on someone's lap or, like, mm-hmm. going out for lunch constantly with the same coworker, or some kind of behavior that you see that you're reading into as being something to cause you concern or a threat to the relationship. Or, you know, and I think speaking of self-esteem, jealousy is a really good way of lowering self-esteem. So no matter what the reasons may be, it's extremely important for you to try to conquer it. Otherwise, you can do great damage to your self-esteem if you really let yourself feel the jealousy mm-hmm. and feel like you're just not good enough and you know, continue on that train. So
it's very, very important. And once you figure out where that's coming from, you need to discover what makes you feel, why it makes you feel jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, say you found out that it makes you jealous when your boyfriend or girlfriend talks to somebody in the opposite sex. Well, you know, you got to figure out what is it about that makes you feel jealous. And, you know, forgive me if I sound like I'm Cosmo, but, you know, did you have experience in a previous relationship? Like, did somebody cheat on you? Is mm-hmm. that why? So you're projecting that onto that person, and, like, you have a fear of being betrayed. And, you know, if so, why does that fear exist? Is your self-esteem a little lower than you thought because you just expect everybody to cheat on you because of that experience? As you can see, there's a huge line of questions that need to be asked and answered in order for that jealousy to be conquered and under control. And acknowledging it is the first step. Man, mm-hmm. I sound like the 12-step program, don't
mm-hmm.
I?
Mm-hmm. But it is true. I mean, any kind of psychological, emotional, you know, mental kind of processes. You have to think about, you know, acknowledging the feelings. Acknowledging the feelings, where are they coming from? You know, once you've realized where your jealousy comes from and what causes it, then you can concentrate on keeping it in control and maybe even getting rid of it. So if the reason has something that you think might have to do with your partner, then it may be best to have a very serious conversation with him or her about it. And, you know, you have the right to express yourself, and they are entitled to knowing what it is that's making you feel jealous. Express yourself nonviolently, hopefully. If they truly care about you, they're going to work on ways to prevent you from experiencing such emotions if they're reasonable and if they care enough.
It's also important to find that... to find ways that you can improve your self-love and health so you can gain strength and confidence and be able to fight off such jealousies when they come to the surface.
It's like we've got 20 minutes. So yeah, when they come to the surface, so toning down your jealousy and possibly getting rid of it for good is going to take time. And it may be gone for good about a certain situation, but it may come back for some other situation. So it's sort of talking about specific things that cause you to be jealous. Eventually, you can work your way away from feeling those ways and actually completely get rid of the feeling. I've done it myself. I've worked very hard at certain aspects of feeling jealous, and I don't feel them anymore. So it does work, but different kinds can come up. So.
I know we're talking a lot about how to handle people's emotions and stuff like that, but what about the person who is dealing with a jealous person? I'm thinking in particular of a certain male friend of mine who you do know, who his girlfriend freaks out at him all the time, like where she actually dumped him when he went to Wreck Beach with me and another friend and a couple other people.
Yeah, I think, it depends on, like, if the person is being rational or not, right?
She's not. It's pathological.
So it's interesting, but...
And his self-esteem's actually gone down.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's like, this is what can happen. I would say that, like, I don't know, for me, what I would say, I'm kind of a hot, kind of a tough love advisor of sorts. So I kind of tend to say, look, you know, communicate with the person, tell them, you know, that you're feeling that their behavior makes you feel a certain way, that they're controlling you, that this is like not working for you. You want them to stop being this way or to trust you. And that, you know, I think for me, basically, I'd be like, this is how I feel. And if you don't start to respect this, then I can't be in this relationship. Because really, when a person is being jealous and possessive and things, then they're controlling you and they're not trusting you, and that's not a relationship. That's not a healthy relationship at all. That's not one built on love or trust or things that relationships should be built on. And so I would basically like say, look, I would kind of be like, well, if you can't sort this out, then I'm sorry, but we're going to have to end it.
Take a break.
So I would just give them ultimatums pretty much, like, be like, you know what, I can't put up with this. It's just not working for me. And you have no reason to feel this way. I respect you. Whatever the situation might be. I have multiple friends and I'm very flirtatious, but I'm not cheating on you. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't betray you in these ways, you know, kind of thing. And if they don't believe you and if they won't,
she's
take
pretty
your
rough on him, and it just doesn't strike me as particularly healthy.
Well, and then this is a sign that he obviously doesn't have the self-esteem that it takes to have enough self-worth to say that this isn't good enough and I'm not putting up with this and I'm ending this, you know. So that's kind of what I'd be doing. I'd be like, give them a chance, tell them that you're going to end it if they don't stop being crazy, and if they don't stop, then you have to end it, because you're the one,
she's been really jealous, like even with me in particular. And I know it's really common for women to feel jealous about each other, like she's really funny because of the fact that I teach pole dancing and stuff, and so she doesn't understand why he's not attracted to me and why we've never gotten together. And I know it's really common, but I don't know. Like, I know the best way to fight this off is to improve your own self-esteem and your own emotional and physical health and lifestyle.
Right.
And, you know, I've suggested to him to try and get her to do things that will help her boost her confidence. Like, she's going to the gym now and doing things. And personally, I think she's beautiful. But, you know, and, you know, if people feel jealous of, like, what a great shape another man or woman is, and, you know, all the attention
that
they get,
yeah,
they've got to start focusing on themselves. And I've actually told her this to her face, you know, rather than, you know, the success. It's really important that she focuses on her, not about, you know, she's out with a couple of our girlfriends and all that. So it's just important, and just concentrating on how to satisfy both physically and mentally for herself.
For yourself, yeah. So if you're the person that feels it, you know, if your jealousy comes, like you're saying, if it comes from a different area, such as your competitive nature, then it's going to be more difficult to tone down your jealousy and to overcome it, because you can't really ever control what other people are doing.
No.
So, I think, I don't know, like, learning how to handle your jealous emotions are going to be a huge influence on how your life situation is going to turn out. Combining your jealousy with a more rational emotion so that you can keep it from going overboard. For example, if you combine it with an equally or almost equally stressful emotion, such as anger, you're only going to push yourself back from reaching the outcomes you really want and what you're looking for. And I think you can end up making a decision that will leave you feeling worse. So, you know, I think extreme rationality is sometimes the only way to get the green-eyed monster under control. And that's like rational inquiry, like we were talking about earlier, asking those questions, like making sure that you understand where it's coming from. So I don't know, so keeping yourself on the right track of conquering jealousy, there's like basically six steps. I'd say acknowledging your jealousy, asking yourself where it's coming from, question why the situation makes you feel jealous, and then making self-health and lifestyle changes that will assist you in fighting it off. Like if it's a competitive thing, or you feel like lesser than these other beautiful people or whatever. And then combining jealousy with the more rational emotion. So when you feel jealousy, combine it with like...
give me an example.
Yeah, so basically combining it with... something rational like what's the rational emotion?
well, self-love.
Yeah, like
I'm just
like
trying to think. I would paint myself a picture. Okay, you're at a party, and we see this girl who you know, comes in, and she's like, she's with somebody that we used to be with or something, or I don't know, and she's wearing the dress that we just wanted to buy at Bebe.
Right. So I think self-worth is a good example.
Okay.
So just not combining it with something that's irrational, like anger. So you kind of want to, like, if you feel jealous, then you can sort of start to go, but, you know, I also feel really, like, calm about this, or like, you know, satisfied with this, you know, and just sort of try to bring up other emotional vibrational feelings in your body that can kind of bring you down, like just to bring that heightened emotion down to something more reasonable. And then of course you got to keep practicing. So as long as you keep these steps in mind and you follow them, you're going to learn how to take control of your jealousy instead of it controlling you. And the last step is the utmost importance. So practice. And I've done this. Like I used to practice this all the time because I used to be so extremely jealous. And
give me an example.
Like I used to, like, seriously, when I was young, I used to, like, my boyfriends couldn't even look at, like, magazine covers or billboards. Like, that's how jealous I was. Like, I'd be like, what are you looking at?
That's what this girl's like.
I'd be like, what are you looking at? And I'd be like, and it was because I felt so, like, I just didn't feel that I was desirable or attractive enough, and it was like I constantly needed my boyfriends to prove their love to me and that I was the center of attention. I still feel kind of strongly like that. I still want to be the most important thing to a person, which is why I've discovered over the last weekend that I don't think I'm made for polyamory. I don't think I can do it. I really figured that out this weekend because I want to be the center of their attention. I want to be the one that they love the most and that they're the most I'm the one that desire the most. And as immature as that is, extending that to controlling them and being super jealous where they can't flirt with or dance with or go for lunch with or whatever, some other person, that's a wholly different thing, right? So you can feel the feelings, but to not projecting them and controlling other people is where the maturity starts to come in, and that if you keep applying that, you keep practicing it, so you feel like this crazy feeling of jealousy, and then you just basically like look at the other direction and just take a deep breath and sort of rationalize in your mind, like, okay, why am I feeling this way? Like, calm down. Some of the things that I used to do to talk myself out of being crazy irrational was that I'd be like, well, you know, if they're going to leave you, they're going to leave you. It's like there's nothing you can do about someone else. You've got to just let go of control, let go of all of your fears and things like that. So really important, yeah, practice. And if you continue to practice the steps, like, you know, acknowledging it, asking yourself where it's coming from, why is the situation making you feel jealous, improving your self-esteem by making lifestyle changes and sort of trying to bring the jealousy emotion down with a more rational one, you can actually, it becomes easier and easier and easier to control this very stressful emotion of jealousy. And sometimes you can become a total master at it and just have it flare up at times where you can talk yourself down from it and not actually ever affect somebody else with your feelings. It's important to take control of your emotions, I think, in every level.
Definitely.
It's going to make you sort of the leader and not the follower of your emotions, which can prevent you from entering, I think, when you follow your own emotions, when you're just so compulsive and things. And I mean, I'm speaking from personal experience. Like this weekend, I just totally broke up with Dan because I was so jealous and whatever, felt like he wasn't making me feel as important as I wanted to feel, that I thought was how I should be feeling about our love. You know, I got it totally irrational. I was like an emotional, crazy person. And so, you know, I'm still in the works. I'm still trying to learn to be a leader of my emotions and not following them. But if you can do that, it can prevent you from entering a lot of unwanted territories, like breakups that are unnecessary, you know, really low self-esteem, like you're talking about with your friend.
Yeah.
Depression is a very common emotion. And even like a more increased amount of jealousy, like you can start to get so, like it just starts to snowball into itself, where it's like you start to feel more and more and more of this jealousy or anger or whatever it is. And the more that you try to become the leader of your emotions and not the follower, you're going to be able to focus on many more important aspects of your life because you begin to see things with a more clear and more open mind. So, I don't know, lately I've been practicing what's called the Metta Brahma, and it's a meditation, and it goes like this. May I be healthy, happy, peaceful, and free. May I joyfully care for myself in this world. And I think the healthy part is physically healthy. So you just start to meditate and think about these things. So when your emotions start to flare up, you think, you know, may I be healthy? And you think that's physical health, you know, and thinking about your own physical health and yourself. May I be happy, which is like, may I be mentally happy and have my mental health? May I be peaceful? And I think in that peacefulness, what they're talking about is that we feel at peace with life, that we kind of trust life around, you know, where's our next paycheck going to come from? Are we going to be able to pay the bills? You know, food on our blog, whatever it might be, relationships that might be going astray or family issues you might be having. So asking for peace, you know, and then may I be free, and may I be free from danger, may I be free from fear. So may I be healthy, happy, peaceful, and free, and then may I joyfully care for myself in this world. And that's very much about what we were talking about, like being, I think it's just Marianne coming, it's Marianne trying to get in, I think. Do you want to go try to check
him?
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks, honey. Yeah, may I joyfully care for myself in this world, I think. Are you okay there, Marianne?
I love you.
I love you too, honey.
Did you say that you could smell us?
Yeah, you smell so good, I smell you.
Oh, fabulous. I'm glad I smell good. I haven't showered since last night.
What do we smell like?
Yeah. How do you smell when you shower, then? Get under the armpits and give us a real judgment on that.
actually, I don't know. How much physical contact are you allowed in this booth, Julia?
I don't know. We don't want to get fired out like the last sex show did for having sex in the booth. That won't happen, Helm Juice Box. And, yeah, so may I joyfully care for myself in this world. I think it's really powerful, too, because it's like we're talking about, like, having the self-esteem and love of your own self to be like solid in who you are. And I think that would really help combat jealousy. And I don't know, it's like when you're in the throes of infatuation, you're going to probably even be more jealous than usual. But I think, like I was saying, jealousy happens
think it's
in every level of our relationships all the time, not just our romantic ones, but you know, the person that has the better car, or the person that's like has the better clothes or the better body or the better partnership or whatever. It's like often
definitely, as you're saying, in terms of I like the meditation that you're doing. I think that's quite lovely.
It's been very helpful for me actually in calming me down, helping me alleviate some depression that I feel. I battle with depression most of my life, and so I have to kind of always work on that one. And I've been finding that it's really helped. Like, helps me get to sleep at night. It helps me, you know, when I start to feel like these feelings of jealousy or inadequacy or whatever, I just keep saying the words over and over and over in my head, and I've found it to be very powerful. So that would be a good rational emotional thing to overcome, you know, or to replace the jealousy.
No, it definitely would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know for me when I, in terms of jealousy and stuff, I don't as much anymore. Of course, I still feel it because I'm human every once in a while. But I spent quite a while actually dating myself for quite a while, where everything from when I'd go swimming in the morning, and for me, it's actually after kids' pool, once that pool opens, which is coming up soon, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, I know you love it.
I do. It's like 12 lengths is actually a mile, so after six, and I'm not panting and dying anymore because you kind of get in that lovely lull. I actually do what I call a gratitude in the morning, where I actually think of all the things I'm really grateful, and I just do things. It's kind of spiritual in some weird way. I wouldn't say it's Christian or anything, but it really helped, actually, and it helped me build a really solid foundation. And even though right now I'm not dating right now, it's just
You're not sleeping with anyone right now.
No, I haven't. I'm not at that stage right now. I haven't found anything that's really piqued my interest, but I also haven't found anybody who's passed the kiss test lately either. So,
kiss test, so important.
It's very important.
People, learn how to kiss. If you don't know how to kiss, freaking
maybe we should teach
take
a class
some lessons.
On that.
Well, there's the kissing class. Yes,
well,
the art of loving down. Gerard and Fifth or whatever.
Do you bring a partner?
Bring a partner.
Okay, I was just wondering.
And I think they coach you and you practice. So I'm not sure. I've always wanted to take it. It was actually it's gotten huge reviews. It's actually been doing really, really well. Like, they have more and more of them. And it was put on CBC, I think. And
oh, really?
Yeah, people really love it. I haven't taken it yet, but
I would like to take that, but I got to find somebody to kiss first. So.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Well, in a couple of weeks, my John will be back, and maybe I'll surprise him with that one.
That could be quite lovely if he's not listening to the show.
Oh, I don't know. And from Mexico, maybe he is. Well, maybe
It's
5 to midnight in Mexico. Yes, he did, and he sent me a beautiful text. It was really wonderful.
It's just super sweet.
Yeah, he's been amazing for someone who's been away and on this meditation kind of retreat. He's been texting me a lot and being incredibly patient with you know, me having, like, you know, going to recompression and having all kinds of crazy sensuous play with whomever and, you know, threesomes up in Whistler and whatever, you know, just like, he's just been so generous.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. We're planning on embarking on a year of monogamy together, which, so I'm pretty excited about that. And I think that'll be really powerful for me anyway. It's been, gosh, it's been 2.5 years since I was monogamous. So, so it'll be really a good exercise for me. And I'm excited about sort of putting all of my sort of romantic and lusty attention into one relationship. I think that'll be good for me.
I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I can't remember when I dated more than one person, you know? It's been quite a while.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of it since Miles and I opened our relationship, which was like 2 years and something. 2 years ago now, I guess.
Yeah. I know when I got out of my long term, I guess that was 2004. That was when I was having my 3 Mr. Right Nows, which had more sex than ever could dream of, which is pretty awesome.
But, yes, it's nice to have a lot of sex, isn't it?
It is.
So we have on Friday, because this coming up, get ready for the stage show that you were talking about, a whole show full of fresh and new pole dancers at the Penthouse. It's a very reasonable price. Fundraiser for
Beauty
Night
Society.
That's right.
I'm not going to mention. You can call and find out more information.
Right. So we hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Caroline and I'll be back next week with another fresh and lively juice box. But in the meantime, you can email caroline@juiceboxradio.com or myself, julia@juiceboxradio.com.
And stay tuned for Hans Kloss' Misery Hour with Marion coming up next. Yes, you're here in the studio on CITR. He's a very sexy man, don't you think, Julia, to be miserable with?
Very sexy man to be miserable with.
And we can let him guide us into the wee hours with his voice and his super, super hot voice and music. So thanks for listening to Juicebox Radio. And we'll be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock.
That's right.
Yes.
See you next week. just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening. You're gonna have to get into it.